It's time to hear what's good, what's bad, and what's ugly at the cinemas and on DVD. Get ready for...
Wait for it!
Film Sociology with WFYI's film guru.
Kaiser Sozi!
No, that's Matthew Sozi.
It's such a fine line between stupid and clever. Yeah.
Let's find out how thin the line is. Here's your host, Matthew Sozi.
What do you plan to do after the All-Star game to get better?
Buy you a new jacket.
Good evening, film lovers. This is Film Sociology, film talk show on WFYI HD2 The Point and WFYI.org. We are available as a podcast and iTunes on Monday afternoon. Thank you, Melissa. You can also follow us, check out our blog at filmsociology.tumblr.com. Good afternoon. Kobe Slagle here. Happy Friday to ya. Like to also remind you that you can find myself and Matthew Sozi on Facebook. You can follow me on Twitter at Kobe Slagle. Joining me now, the host of Film Sociology, Matt Sozi. Matt, happy April Fool's Day.
I'm Kobe Slagle, and I hope the Pacers win. Tyler Hansbrough is the greatest basketball player ever. And Tim Tebow's the future.
He is.
What the hell's wrong with you?
Don't you forget that.
Yeah.
Yep.
The future of third-string quarterbacks.
Shut up.
God. Well, you just took most of the intro there, so.
I didn't tell people how, if they have a question or comment, they can contact you.
At msoci at WFYI.org.
Right. Yep.
Yes. February 1st, where you get to act a fool. It's justified. Well, we have
April 1st. Don't send us back in time.
Did I say August 1st?
You said.
But no, that was just a clever April Fool's joke. Just say February.
Dying here. We haven't even started. In studio, the mature half of the studio, maybe. Managing director of the Indianapolis International Film Festival, Lisa Trifone. Hey, Lisa.
Hello.
And, yes, the director of development for the Booth Tarkington Civic Theater. And guest, Megan McKinney.
Hey, thank you. Thanks, Matt. Thanks for having me on today.
Nice to have all three of you here.
Yeah.
So.
Well, I don't know about Kobe.
Oh, I'm not talking to you about Kobe. No, his pranks are just amazing.
I know. Isn't that great?
It was authentic.
Yeah.
We love our imitations here at Film Sociology. They sound so real.
I'm Matt Sozi, and I talk about movies.
I'm Kobe Slagle, and I like white basketball. All right.
I'm Matt Sozi, and I like bad sports teams.
Wow.
That's true.
You turn my... Yeah, I can give you three reasons why that's a wrong... That's a false statement.
Okay, well, you know.
And the ABA doesn't count. That all being said, yes, I am still rooting for Butler.
This is a basketball show. I think I need to...
No. It's okay. We have this... Mr. Slagle and I have this little banter. He owes me a growler for not the past week's game, but the week before when your Pacers and my Pistons played and the Detroit emerged triumphant. And I swear, you should really bet next time so that way we can even it out. But, of course, the Pacers prevailed this week against Detroit, clutching onto that number 8 spot so they can get trounced by Boston or Chicago.
Yeah, most likely Derrick Rose.
Yeah, Charles Barkley doesn't like Derrick Rose. Yeah, look how well that's working out for you. All right, let's get into stuff here. Not screened for the press was Insidious, although it's been getting a couple of decent write-ups. I know David Ellison for the most part, but two write-ups in the papers have been pretty good. Source Code, which is the Jake Gyllenhaal action thriller thing. And here in Indianapolis, sometimes they book two movies in the same night to be screened in advance. And I know all of my colleagues at the Indiana Film Journalists Association were at Source Code from the director of Moon, Duncan Jones. I know they were all there because that same night was the screening of Hop. And I have a daughter on spring break.
Guess where he went?
Guess where I went? I looked around and like, nobody else is here for this. Nobody in my group. All the doughy white guys and Gina went to go see Source Code.
You guys need t-shirts.
Let's say that. IFJA.
Gina, you should make t-shirts.
Gina Wagner from Haunted Flower. So just they should say IFJA on the front and on the back. Doughy white guys except for hers.
Yep. It
says Gina.
Mm-hmm.
Nice. Yes, from the creators of Despicable Me, Hop. It's half animated, half live action about, well, a bunny who doesn't want to be the Easter Bunny, even though his dad is. See, even in cartoons, we have characters with dad issues. And he runs across James Martins, who really wants to be a bunny or an Easter Bunny. Listen, play the audio.
The Easter Bunny works one day a year, travels the world, and is beloved by everyone. Who wouldn't want a job like that?
Evie! You're about to be crowned the Easter Bunny.
Look, Dad, I want to drum in a band. I want to see the world.
Evie, the Easter Bunny sees every country in one night.
Oh, really, Dad? What about China?
Oh, no! It's Candy Woman! Right, so we haven't cracked China yet.
I don't want to be the Easter Bunny.
4,000 years of tradition doesn't end just because one selfish bunny doesn't feel like doing it.
My dad's right. I do need to get my act together.
In Hollywood, all great artists suffer before they become famous. That lady wrote Harry Potter in a ditch.
I have the talent. I have the drive. I have to avoid whatever that was.
You know what? We can leave the insurance companies out of this.
We need to find EB. Assemble the Pink Berets at once.
I could bunk down anywhere. West Wing, Master Suite, I'm not picky. What are the newspapers for?
Yeah, you know, you're an animal, so...
Oh, I understand. I'll just sleep down here, among my poo and pee like a pig.
Now he's chasing his dream.
Never had one formal lesson.
And letting nothing...
Brick, why am I in a box?
...stand in his way.
I'll behave. I'll clean up my mess. I'm special. I'm really special.
What are you doing? Jelly beans?
So you talk and you poop candy.
This spring...
You're not getting it. I have a date with destiny.
It's all about candy.
Don't eat that. You might not like the flavor.
Fred, relax. Watermelon.
Chicks.
Can I at least touch it? Ow! There.
You touched it.
Thank you.
And rock and roll.
Stop! Stop!
I didn't like it.
I loved it.
Huh?
Look at this. Look how cute this stuffed bunny is.
Aww.
Oh, he's so soft and cute and cuddly and warm.
Is she seeing anyone?
No, she's single and she's looking for a rabbit.
No, the bunny did not pee on the girl. I know that's what it sounded like.
What you risk when it's just
that's
audio.
What you interpreted. I didn't hear that.
Nice.
Yeah.
Kobe, you had a question. You had a question while watching the trailer. You have
yes.
Yes. What?
Okay. So yeah, in the trailer you heard the Easter Bunny travels around the world.
Yes.
One day a year he travels around the world.
Right. Sounds vaguely familiar.
Yes. You never hear anything about how the Easter Bunny travels around the
but
world.
But how do you know he travels around the world? Because
well,
are
they just
there...
said he did.
Oh, they did.
I believe everything I hear in trailers.
Well, maybe he borrows Santa's sleigh. Because it's the off-season.
It is the off-season. Oh, that's good.
It's that not, could. It's oh, you're saying like he rents it out?
Yeah.
Like that kind of thing?
It's just collecting dust.
Subleasing the
I think it's
yeah.
underground. I think he does it underground.
Yeah. He's mm-hmm. probably got it paid for by this point. He's just, you know.
Who? Santa?
Well, maybe.
Santa,
maybe.
You, Santa rent to own?
He's made all his sleigh payments.
Oh, yeah. Definitely.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah.
You don't want to lay off little elves.
Maybe there's more than one bunny. Just saying.
That could be two.
Are you talking about Mrs. Sousy?
Ah,
only bunny wow. in my house. Yeah. Okay, when it comes to...
We're on the radio.
Yes, we are. When it comes to animated films, sometimes I've talked about this before where you're watching the Oscar-nominated films from at least November to about February, and then there's the drop.
Mm-hmm.
where you're just going to have to actually start seeing new films that come out regardless. Well, let's put it this way. The last animated film I saw before this was The Illusionist, which was up for best animated film and I thought should have won it. Right. So
this is different.
This is a step in a different direction.
Is it a step or is it falling off a cliff?
It's not. It's not falling off a cliff.
Might you say it's a hop?
And guess what? This movie isn't about pancakes either.
Oh, you know what? I heard that from somebody else.
Wow.
Yeah, sorry.
Wish I'd come up with that.
Wow.
So, yeah, there's Russell Brand is the voice of the bunny who wants
to. Are you
to
serious?
Oh, that's why he's British.
Yes.
Yes.
And Hugh Laurie plays his dad.
Oh, yeah. Love Hugh Laurie.
Okay, so we're just yaying and booing whoever's casting the show. Is that? Let's see.
Keep going.
Okay, all right. There's two stories into the film. There's the slacker son who wants to play drums because he's wearing a Stax T-shirt, flannel shirt, and no pants, so he's Pooh Bear but with a really good rhythm. And he doesn't want to inherit his dad's job. That's the other thing. The Easter Bunny is handed down. Yes, the Easter Bunny title is handed down from,
from
generation
to
generation. So, and he doesn't want to do it. He just wants to bang on the drum all day.
Sure.
And winds up in the real world and comes across a slacker, plays James Marsden, who, as we find out, wants to be an Easter Bunny. Problem is, he's human.
Strange.
That's a strange one. Now, that's one story. The other story is, yes, you have Hugh Laurie as the voice of the Easter Bunny. And, he's having trouble with his son. Meanwhile, there's a chick, baby chick, little yellow furry chick.
Yeah.
That
Thank
careful,
you for
Megan.
Clearing that up.
Got two chicks over here.
But a chick in the movie.
I thought, what a
that's
wait
it. Well,
a
that's that she played. That's the sister. We'll talk about her later. But no, there's a chick that wants to take over the factory, and he's voiced by Hank Azaria.
Jeez.
Yes.
Which Hank Azaria? Because he can do.
Oh, this is Mexican Hank Azaria.
I was
going to
say Birdcage Hank Azaria.
He's not wearing the same outfits as it was in the Birdcage. So there's this mutiny on the bounty bunny thing, and then there's the bunny who talks and hops around and plays drums for David Hasselhoff. I'm not making that
sounds
up.
Sounds like a very layered plot.
Yeah, it is. And guess what? There's rock music that, really a child it would never ever listen to in a million years, even if it is remade by one of today's hip hot artists. Like,
but it is
I
a
want
kids
candy.
Movie. I mean,
yeah, it is. It's a kids movie. Let's put it this way: the kids film correspondent could not be here today. She is spending quality time with Blythe. And she loved it, of course.
Of course.
And there's a couple of moments. Yes. By the way, here's Pun City. This film is done by Universal Studios. The logo, it's egg shaped.
Yeah.
It's egg shaped.
Yep.
Because the globe, See. Yeah. And then like the couple of shots inside the factory, which is a combination of Willy Wonka and Mr. Magorium's Wunderbar Emporium is it's pretty cool looking. They're nice little moments, but not enough to unless you're under the age of 10 or a kids film correspondent, you're going to enjoy this. Parents, it might be a little bit of a stretch.
So the most recent animated film I caught was Rango, and that was one of those where I've been telling
everybody,
go see it, go check it out.
As we know, last week, Child was here and raved about it.
So Rango has that all ages thing going for it. What I'm hearing you say is
mostly kids.
Not so much.
Oh, by the way, the bunny poops jelly beans. That's funny.
Yeah, it is.
It's funny, really?
It is funny.
And it's funny more than once?
More than once.
Okay.
Twice. Happens twice.
Twice.
Sister eats them. As you see in the trailer.
I sense skepticism on your part.
And it seems like kind of a one joke, a one-time joke.
Mm-hmm. Megan?
But,
This is what you have to look forward to.
I know.
Megan is expecting, so she's...
I'm currently expecting, and my partner, Doug, is actually looking at Hoplite. That's one I could take the kid to.
Yeah, you know what? There was a great moment in our marriage and in our familyhood where the three of us were in a movie, and it was a trailer for the first Alvin and the Chipmunks film, which, by the way, this guy directed. It does have that vibe. But
very chipmunky-ian feel to it.
It does.
There's a rodent theme.
Yeah. Well, Lynn saw me react to the film, and she leaned over and whispered, "I'll take her to this one." That's a sign of a great partner, great spouse, is
taking one for the team.
So, and I'm proud to say I've never seen Alvin the Chipmunks or the Squeakles.
Well,
so
I guess fortunately for me, Doug wanting to take the baby to see this show, he wouldn't consider that taking one for the team. He would consider me sacrificing, giving up the opportunity to see this.
Wow.
So I really lucked out.
Yes. Thank you, Doug.
Yeah.
So that being said, what do you got there?
I got
the rundown. Do you have consumption?
What? No, go ahead and play the audio.
Okay.
Otto, don't flatter yourself. It wasn't that great.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, we're going to take a short break, and then we're going to talk about what's on DVD and get Kobe some water.
Yep.
You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD2 The Point and WFYI.org.
Any good?
I don't watch movies.
Well, have you heard anything about either one of them?
I find it's best to stay out of other people's affairs. You know who I can do without? I can do without the people in the video store.
Which ones?
All of them.
What would you get for a 6-year-old boy who chronically wets his bed?
So do you have any new movies in?
Do you have that one with that guy who was in that movie that was out last year?
They never rent quality flicks. They always pick the most intellectually devoid movie on the racks.
Ooh, Navy SEALs!
It's like in order to join, they have to have an IQ less than their shoe size.
Just go open the video store.
Yeah, open the video store!
And the box at the end of the store is open. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD2 The Point and WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msoci@WFYI.org, and I'm also on Facebook. Kobe, that's how you do it. Megan McKinney, the Director of Development for Booth Tarkington Civic Theater, is hanging out with us, as well as Lisa Trifone, Managing Director of the Indianapolis International Film Festival. Before we get into the DVDs, I forgot that, Lisa, you got to attend a press conference with some of the folks from Source Code, which opened today.
Yeah, I had asked, I know you mentioned you went to Hop instead of Source Code, so I asked if you were going to maybe catch it, you know, afterwards. So I went down to South by Southwest for a week. So
Hipsters Brigade.
Yeah. There were lots of Buddy Holly glasses and skinny jeans.
And what were the guys wearing?
I wasn't able to make it to the movie, so Source Code opened the film festival portion.
Right.
But I did sit in. They had a panel that had screenwriter, director Duncan Jones, Jake Gyllenhaal, Michelle Monaghan, and Vera Farmiga on the panel.
Did you tell Vera I said hi?
You know, I would have. I was too busy.
You were too busy Google-eyeing Jake Gyllenhaal.
I was too busy, a little woozy over Jake Gyllenhaal being like three rows in front of me.
Did you pitch the musical version of Love and Other Drugs with him?
Starring me.
Duh.
Duh.
Anne's too expensive.
Anne would probably be better at the musical than me.
I'm not going to respond to that. So anyway, so how did it go?
So it was interesting.
interesting. You know, I like I said, I wasn't able to catch the film, but I would after that. Just hearing them all talk about from the director's standpoint, you know, the writer-director of Moon, which if you haven't seen
loved,
Moon, you
absolutely
must go
loved.
See Moon.
One of the best.
Moon.
No, I haven't
it's,
seen
yeah,
it.
Sam Rockwell. It's basically a Sam Rockwell show.
I love Sam man. Rockwell. Yeah.
And there's a computer. It's not HAL 9000, but it's voiced by Kevin Spacey. So, and it's he's I don't think he got paid buku bucks for this, so it's actually a good performance. But no, it is a really, it could have
how
been.
How long ago? Like how recently?
Was that 2 years ago?
Well, I want to say like 2007, 2008, okay. Something like
it
that.
It feels like it. But Duncan Jones is the son of David Bowie.
Okay.
And it's.
And did he write Moon?
He wrote and directed Moon.
Right.
Okay.
And it's a really good sci-fi. It's more 2001 than say Event Horizon or it's you know some or Jason in Space or any of that nonsense.
And the only thing I would say is before you watch it, don't like just watch it. Don't look it up. Don't read about it. Just watch.
Just
it.
Watch it.
Then in fact, don't listen to us.
Then
I haven't been the whole time. Don't worry.
It's just like home.
Oh.
It is when I hang out with Megan all the time.
And then after you watch it, look up like how Sam Rockwell played the part. All of those sorts of things. It's astounding.
Okay, yeah. Great. Oh, good.
Yeah, see, there's your tip.
All
right
there. I like that recommendation. Thank you.
So source code, it was interesting to hear Duncan Jones talk about making the film but not having written it. You know, what...
To just be a director for hire.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. But what he was able to still bring to the part, the plot essentially is that Jake Gyllenhaal relives the last 8 minutes of this guy's life to try to find a bomb.
Wasn't this Prince of Persia? Didn't he have a dagger that also made you go back in time?
His
and,
hair is shorter in this one.
Oh, really? And less jumping around video game style?
Completely different situation.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
It changes the stakes.
It does. It really
Source code's
does.
Not based on a video game or a ride?
No. It's a real cultural think piece.
I see.
Yes.
You're a real cultural think piece.
Thank you.
All right, I want to come back to David Bowie's son, if I may, for just a second.
Is
that allowed?
Duncan Jones is David Bowie's son,
okay,
yes.
Okay, Duncan Jones, David Bowie's son. So he must be pretty young.
It's probably, what, early 20s, mid-20s? No?
Oh, he seemed late 20s, early okay. 30s.
Wow, okay.
I would say.
Duncan Jones. I'm
writing
it all down.
You're going to Google image him, aren't you?
I've been instructed to watch Moon without Googling anything, so I'm going to.
You listen to her, mm-hmm. It's just like home. Okay. Wow. Oh, well, cool. Thank you for that.
It was very cool. It was neat to get that up close for a film this big, you know?
Excellent. All right, let's move to what is new on DVD and Blu-ray this week. And topping this week, Megan, is Black Swan, or as I like to call it, Academy Award winning Black Swan. So... I brought.
Wait, do I sense a difference of opinion?
Oh, big time.
Yeah,
big time. We've talked about this on Facebook and in person, not on the air.
Yeah.
But now we have a chance to do this on air. Now, Megan, but you are my guest, yes. And I am the host. I will let you speak first. However, there's a couple things I would like to ask you, because I don't think I've ever asked you this in a semi-serious note.
Yeah.
Going into the film, mm-hmm. Had you seen any other films directed by Darren Aronofsky?
No.
None of them.
None.
Oh, great.
And
first
I don't
impression.
Know if that. Yeah. So
okay,
I,
that's one. Were you a dancer?
No, I mean I was always a performer, but I was never a strict dancer.
Okay.
Like what's
were you
in the
a
film.
Dancer?
Hell no.
Not like you, Matt.
I'm Caucasian male, is shaped like the letter zero. There's no dancing there. Do you have an intense white hot hatred for Natalie Portman?
Not at all.
Okay. All right. Floor is yours.
Okay. Actually, I think she deserved an Academy Award.
Well,
for Beautiful Girls.
Apparently her dance double disagrees with you. But go on. Yeah, she's great in Beautiful Girls.
Yeah,
but go on.
I thought she deserved an Academy Award for that movie.
Uh-huh.
I just didn't care for the movie at all. I didn't care what happened to her in the slightest bit the entire time.
Okay.
I found her to be very one level. I thought the directing was very poor. I don't understand why there are a lot of things that it just didn't that just seemed very contrived. The ending of the film in particular
was perfect.
So raced. It was so raced through, mm-hmm. that I thought when it finally was over, it was like I thought it was almost a joke. It just didn't work at all for me. And I should probably, I don't know how to capture this the best.
Careful, you're on air.
We saw it. I know. We saw it the first or second night it was out. It was very early in the run. And the rest of the audience, it was a full theater, and the rest of the audience had clearly just come from dance class. It was like a whole bunch of dancers had just gotten out of dance class, and they were so excited to see the movie, and they were in the theater with us.
I bet they knew less than you.
They laughed at the movie, mm-hmm. not intentionally.
Not with.
There was a scene in the film where one of the characters knocks on Natalie Portman's condo door, and somebody in the theater was really quick, and the scene went knock, knock, and somebody yelled, "Dominoes," and that was my favorite part of the whole film.
It's funny you mentioned that. Darren Aronofsky wrote that in the script. He's that good. So
he put someone in the audience at every screening.
He did, actually. He's that kind of meticulous filmmaker.
And I also should say, I wanted to like it. Mm-hmm. I really wanted to.
Did you go
into it with that, like, with these expectations of this is going to be the best movie of the year? I've heard so much about it. I'm going to love it.
No.
So it wasn't.
No, I mean it wasn't like. That wasn't what I thought it was going to be at all. I mean, it was kind of what I thought it was going to be. It just wasn't as good as I thought it was going to be.
Okay.
You know, I didn't care for the ending. I just didn't care about her. And I just didn't believe that somebody could get to that level of a performer who didn't really seem like she had the courage to go grocery shopping. I mean,
you've been in theater how many years?
Well, exactly. I mean, people who get to that level have some backbone, and I mean, she was. I didn't understand why, you know, her mom was her support and her best friend through, you know, half the film, and then all of a sudden she's not. And I don't know. None of it added up for me.
So you know how we said you have to go see Moon?
Yeah.
Don't go see The Wrestler.
No, you do see The Wrestler. The hell's the matter with you? Yes.
She's not gonna like it.
No, she'll like it.
I want to see The Wrestler,
see,
though.
I was gonna say like no, she will. She will, because, well, you know, he doesn't turn into a ram. He just that's just his nickname. So no, I think it's an excellent companion piece with Black Swan.
Why? This is interesting. I never would have thought The Wrestler would.
I will tell you, yeah. And then I'll let Lisa speak her piece. I think what he does with both films in two entirely different approaches is tackle a world. I mean, really, I think gets a world down to a pretty exact science. In the case of The Wrestler, what Rourke's life is at this time, you know, he's a professional wrestler in his 50s, and he's not Hogan and he's not Flair. He is, you know, doing crap money in basements of community centers and churches and schools and that sort of thing. And he's damaged, he's banged up, and, you know, has a day job at a supermarket. This captures a lot of wrestlers who are still clinging on. I think in his own warped way, that Aronofsky captures the cliquish, backstabbing, recycling world of ballet. From the Winona Ryder character to Vincent Perez just looking for the next young hot thing to Mila Kunis, who's trying to be all about Eve with more finger action. And
really?
Yeah. And stage mom's straight out of Gypsy, only less singing and no dancing. So I think with all of that, and also tapping into the insecurities of somebody who's not allowed to eat, has to be keep spinning and maybe do things with the director, which we hope doesn't happen, and looking behind her back to see if the next girl is going to come up after her. And does she have to deal with the old person who's bitter? An old person, I mean by Winona Ryder,
right.
You know, shooting daggers at her for taking a spot.
Right, I totally get that, and
but you still don't care about her.
Well, no.
Okay.
I mean, I get that that's the point.
Right.
I get that that's what the world is trying to be created, but I don't buy it. I don't buy it at all from the way that film is made. She's not happy being a dancer. She's miserable, and she's also crazy from the start. It's not like we watch her descend into craziness.
Yeah, there's a whole lot of, you're not sure how much of this is in her head and how much is not.
Right, right.
Until the very end.
Well, you also can see what's coming a mile away. I mean, there's not a dancer missing from the second act of Black Swan, because you would notice that there's, I mean, she didn't kill somebody. She's obviously, but she's also wearing a white dress. And so when everyone is so surprised that she has this dagger stuck in her, it's really contrived to me. I mean, I don't know. I totally understand what you're saying. I don't buy it at all in this film.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Lisa?
Gosh. So I will say you're not the first person that I've heard
that opinion. This is probably one of the most polarizing film of last year. I mean,
no,
more than Social Network.
Me to hear that. Okay.
So I definitely I
love Social Network.
There's you know, I've definitely heard that sentiment of I just had to laugh. It was so absurd. I couldn't buy into it for whatever reason. And I think that's why we're all sitting around these microphones talking about films. Mm-hmm. That's why we love it. I completely did buy into it. I found it riveting. I found it powerful. I found it challenging, and I thought that it took challenges. I thought that it did better visually to express all those mental processes, all those things that descent that happens, mm-hmm. than probably any film in recent memory. You know, the wrestler.
Requiem for a Dream, The
Black
Fountain.
Swan. Well, just those two comparisons, you know, the idea of someone pushing themselves physically and mentally to perfection, to be something that's almost outside of themselves, you know, the parallels there. The ending that you found to be hurried and saw it coming a mile away, and it just felt, you know, I found it, to use your word, perfect. Like, it was frenzied and it was frantic and it was manic and it, like, how it was supposed to be. And we weren't supposed to be handheld into where it all landed. You know, it couldn't have ended any other way. That was the ultimate, you know, that was how this was all going to wrap up. But, you know, for whatever reason, and that's the fun of this, is that I don't know why, but you thought that of it, and I thought this.
I know.
And that's freaking awesome.
Well, and you know, you know what's interesting is that most people I know have the same opinion that you guys do about this film.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I wish I was in your club.
That's why you're over there, Megan.
I know. I know at least it was everybody in the theater with us the night that we saw it, because everybody was like,
And the thing was, we saw this No, I got a screener of this. I wanted to see this with an audience, especially when the legs go the other way and we actually see a swan doing unspeakable things backstage.
Well, yeah, Doug did ask me to mention also that the feathers growing out of her back were ridiculous.
That's symbolism, man. Big time. And also, this film made me wince more than that. Like pulling the feathers out, pulling the hangnails.
But that's just gory. I mean, that's just shock value.
The scenes in the bedroom, those aren't gory.
But shock,
a little shock value.
Yeah.
I would too if Barbara Hershey was staring at me
She's
in the morning.
She's crazy, but let's make it a little pornographic, you know?
A little. And by the way, so just so, because they're not here right now, and I they were on the show before, but some female coworkers of mine did a ladies' night out and saw that on my recommendation.
Oh, you
it
are.
Was,
you're
all
wicked.
Right, it was either this. Great, I'm a great musical. It was either that or The Dilemma, and I still think everything in Black Swan is far more realistic than Kevin James being with Winona Ryder and Jennifer Connelly being with Vince Vaughn.
That's a good point.
Here's the thing is, you know, I wonder how much of it is that what the expectations are, and I realize I'm going to say this after you just talked about that you didn't like it, mm-hmm. and I don't know what kind of films you like.
I am love.
But, oh, don't you even.
But
I could not stand that film, by the way. That was another one that we disagree on.
That maybe there, that's the,
The Tilda Swinton operatic.
Yes. I loved I Am Love.
Oh, no.
I loved that film. She should have been nominated for Best Actress.
Oh, I'm sorry. Just so nobody could see this on radio. Megan just burped. Megan had a little throat burp action there. She also could not care for the operatic intensity of I Am Love.
See, but I Am Love, I think what duped audiences, and that's kind of what I was getting to with Black Swan, is that anybody who went into I Am Love thinking that they were just seeing Tilda Swinton in, like, speaking Italian in a romantic movie was going to be upset, because it was a foreign film. It was an Italian film, and it was made in, you know, an Italian,
style. And I say opera because it was overly emotional. Everything was emotionally pushed to an extreme, like most operas that are out there.
And I worry that, you know, someone expecting The Dilemma walked into Black Swan and went, what the? And
well, that's what my coworkers did
exactly.
When it came. But to be fair, the film they picked before that on their own to have a girls' night out was Love and Other Drugs. So I think they just want to see naked people.
They don't want to admit it, though.
They don't want to admit it.
No. Nope.
So they're not going to let me pick.
We want your opinion. Wink, wink.
Yeah, thank you for winking on camera.
Can I,
or on the
can
radio.
I say one more thing about Black Swan?
Yes, dear.
This is one thing I did where my expectations were out of check. There wasn't enough dancing.
See, and I had people tell me there was too much dancing.
Natalie Portman, you know, waving her arms from the waist up is not dancing to me. There was just not enough good dancing.
So, are you familiar with the controversy right now?
Yeah, because apparently there's a dance double thinking she's Mercedes McCambridge wanting half the Oscar.
Is this a little Milli Vanilli going on?
Possibly that, and then...
They never claimed that they didn't use a double
for
Natalie Portman's dancing. They never said that they didn't. What happened was that this dancer, and I forget her name, is out there saying 80% of the shots on screen, that's me dancing. I mean, it got so far
people can't be surprised by having dance
double.
But it got so far,
I saw a response online from Darren Aronofsky saying, we counted, she's in like 25%. Right. So to your comment about more dancing, I wonder if there should have been more body double.
And this is very similar to when actress Mercedes McCambridge spoke out, because she was the demonic voice in The Exorcist. So when Linda Blair got a nomination, Mercedes wanted her cut of the thing as well. By the way, stuntmen should also get acting awards while we're at it.
If we're going to go there.
And stand-ins.
Right.
Stand-ins would be good
hand
on that, too.
Models.
Hand models. That's always good.
That is kind of a tough
You know what?
Call.
The girl who poses as Vera Farmiga's butt in Up in the Air should also be nominated.
Yes,
but that's
we,
a different story.
You know what?
That's
that
a different
is one
story
thing I would agree with you about. That is some
it really broke my heart when I found out it was not her.
The other half of the Winklevi who
that's right.
They replaced his face.
See? So
yeah.
There.
Oh, yeah, there you
He's
go.
He's fine with it.
There
he moved
go.
On.
There. So we've now tackled all technical aspects of awards. So there
You're
you go.
Welcome.
Well, I'm still going to see The Fighter because I really do want to see
The Wrestler.
I mean, the Wrestler.
The Wrestler is the Darren Aronofsky.
I'm looking
one.
At The Fighter
yeah.
on the desk. That's what I'm getting
confused. That's right.
No, I do want to see
Kobe.
The Wrestler. Yeah.
Yeah, no,
and
please
I still
do. Please
will.
Do. I now, because then I'll bring you back.
Yeah, can we come back then?
I almost.
Well, you too? Yep. Yeah. Two women debating? We might as well have beer and chips. This is great.
Yeah, this is
and
cool.
And I wonder, this is all in good fun. Absolutely.
Yes.
I wonder what your thoughts would be, because I would say if you're going to go watch Darren Aronofsky, he's almost a director that you want to watch chronologically and watch.
I am not going to make Megan watch Requiem for a Dream after talking about this.
But there's something to be said for, like, when you go to see a Martin Scorsese movie, you know what you're going to get. You have a Martin Scorsese film, and there's something to see his evolution and, like, the crazy movies even Aronofsky makes.
You know, Lisa, that's a good point, because I don't know a lot about filmmaking, and I don't know a lot about filmmakers. I'm very much a layperson, even though I love, you know, watching films. And I wonder if having a little bit more context would help inform what I'm seeing, especially in this situation. Yeah.
Why don't you make her see The Fountain next?
Don't go see The Fountain.
Or Pie.
But...
You gonna make her watch Pie first before The Wrestler? See?
Okay, just go see The Wrestler.
Host Trump's guest. Okay.
Keep in mind, I am 6 months pregnant, so a lot of things put me to sleep really easily.
And by the way,
don't see The Fountain.
And by the way, I'm saying this while we're on the air, so it's on record, because I did this at home, and as you can see, Emma's fine. You can watch anything the first year.
Oh, okay.
Anything.
And it won't register.
No, Emma has not said anything about me watching The Wild Bunch with her when she was 3 months old. She's Kobe, however.
Does that also translate into you can say anything the first year?
Well, when they repeat you the first time, then you stop.
Then you stop. Okay.
I learned that the hard way.
It's looking in the mirror at that point. Yeah.
Okay. Also on DVD and Blu-ray this week is a film that got a little bit of Oscar buzz and then it didn't, and but it's still a good film nonetheless. And it's Fair Game with Naomi Watts and Sean Penn, and it's based on the true story about a leak that the government put out. Shocking there.
Yeah.
that the Watts' character is
Valerie Plame.
Yes, is a member of the CIA, and
yeah.
What she and her husband, played by Penn, do about it. And even though it's directed by Doug Liman, who gave us the Bourne Identity, it is not a Bourne film. You don't need Dramamine to watch it. but it's more about how their marriage is affected by, I don't know, everybody in the government and the globe looking out for them or looking at them.
Well, and about how each of them deals with it.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's not 3 Days of the Condor. It's not a political thriller.
Right.
It's more domestic drama with a lot of political overtones.
And I think the reason that it didn't sort of live up to, and it's just the state of, you know, it's how these things work, the timing was wrong for Oscar buzz. It was an early release.
Early fall.
Yeah. The timing was, it was too far in advance.
Yeah.
I loved it. I loved the film and loved, I've read the book, the Valerie Plame.
Oh, did you?
Autobiography, and the number of pages that are redacted in that book. I mean, she's still got a contract or whatever with the CIA that they have to check. You know, they have right to to censor everything that she publishes. And you know, the epilogue of the book, an independent reporter goes out and fills in everything that's redacted. So you know where she was at these times and all of that. And I thought it was extremely accurate, the facts of this is the sequence of events. And then to your point, it took that a step further to make it a compelling film to talk about how these two highly ambitious, powerful, intelligent people dealt with the betrayal of their government.
Yeah. By the way, mission accomplished. So, yeah, that's definitely worth checking out. Also on DVD and Blu-ray, and I was reminded it's on DVD and Blu-ray this week at home, Tangled is
aww.
Out. Yes, yes, yes. Which Christopher Lloyd said, my old, are you going to pull that up? Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, you know I'm going to pull
I know. Christopher Lloyd said it's the best Disney animated film since Beauty and the Beast. Not including Pixar. Think about that.
Well, what else have they made?
That's
since
you know
Beauty
what
and
I
the
you
Beast?
Know what I know when you said that because anytime you say the best since this or the best ever, you know you're like, well, let's go back. Let's see, Mulan, Tarzan,
what was
Lion
the one
King,
that just, the one that just came out with the African American princess,
Princess and the Frog,
princess
which
and the
Frog. I liked that quite a bit, actually.
That was a return to form, of the Beauty and the Beast era.
Mm-hmm.
That was absolutely a return to form. But so, I would say that Tangled was better than Princess and the Frog.
I think I just prefer Princess and the
really?
Frog. I think because I'm a jazz nerd. So
well,
I kind of like that environment a little more.
Sure.
And this one, yeah, it's you know, a very spastic Rapunzel with, you know, funny horses and and funny evil old people and, you know, a dashing prince who gives you the what was it, the burn, the look. So... Anyway, no, I liked it. Obviously, you know, kids film correspondent, if she were here, would shoot me a look because I didn't love it as much as she did. But this is you have Chris Lloyd audio. You love playing this.
Oh yeah, this is just gold here.
Yeah,
yeah, it's not hella bad.
is that high praise coming?
No,
from
that's
Chris Lloyd?
No. It's just we're now collecting sound bites from our guests. You guys might be on a future show. You never know. No. Actually, I think that was him talking about The Dilemma. But no, I think he said best Disney film since Beauty and the Beast. So that's actually not bad. It's not a bad thing. But so no, that's also
well, rich. And it's one if you haven't seen it, if you didn't catch it in the theaters, now that it's out, it's worth checking out. If you're a Disney fan, if you're
yes,
you know,
so. Also, Criterion, because yes, I'm one of those. Love the Criterion, especially love the Criterion Blu-ray. But they put out Mike Leigh's Topsy Turvy with Jim Broadbent, and it's about, well, Gilbert and Sullivan creating the Mikado. Now, Mike Leigh, who of course got a nomination this past year for Another Year, which was a film I absolutely loved, and I'm a sucker for his kitchen sink dramas. Like, well, Vera Drake was not kitchen sink. Other things were happening in the sink. But there, you know, films like Naked, Secrets and Lies, Career Girls, you know, really blue-collar, heavy British drama. And this one, it's a backstage drama about getting an opera off the ground with everything from writing to rehearsals to the performance itself. And the detail that he does with from characters and stuff that you see on and off stage is really a lot of fun. I really, really enjoyed myself watching this.
He is known for a lot of ad-libbing in his...
Well, part of it is, I mean, they rehearsed 6 months.
Okay.
6 months.
Oh, wow, that's a long time.
That is a long time. That's a long time for anything.
That's a long time for anything.
But and what happens is that he kind of develops a script or a guideline based on a lot of improvisation from his actors.
Sure.
You notice if, you know, he gets a very similar core of people he works with whenever possible, like Jim Broadbent and Christopher Spall and those guys, Imelda Staunton. So they kind of develop that. So I kind of like the fact that you do commit yourself that much, and you always put out a fascinating piece of work. Happy-Go-Lucky was another one that he did with Sally Walker. So, yeah, so I'm glad this is finally getting the Criterion treatment with all, because I'm one of those dorks that listens to everything. If I'm going to pay $40 for a Blu-ray, I want everything.
Yeah, every feature.
So, now, I know you've been noticing this has been very audio-free as far as trailers. However, I want to get to some old titles that come out on DVD and Blu-ray, because you might want to stock up. And if you don't have the money to convert everything over from DVD to Blu-ray, I know I don't. I totally understand that. But this is also a part of Film Sociology Lexicon, because the audio is a part of the show, but this film is finally out on Blu-ray, and I think you might have to go get it.
is the secret of Soylent Green.
New York City, in the year 2022. Nothing runs anymore. Nothing works. But the people are the same. And the people will do anything to get what they need.
This is the police.
What they need most is Soylent Green.
The supply of Soylent Green has been exhausted. Return to your home.
What is the secret of Soylent Green?
Detective Sergeant Thorne. He has a 2-year backlog of unsolved murders. Now he's on a case that must be solved. Saul Roth, Thorne's private library.
Hey, Saul!
A living book in a world without books.
Have some pencils, courtesy of your next assignment. William R. Simonson.
Simonson. He was the first to learn the secret of Soylent Green.
They told me to say that they were sorry, but that you had become unreliable.
Saul Roth was the next to know.
How do we come to this?
And he chose to die rather than reveal the secret of Soylent Green.
What is the secret of Soylent Green?
Why did you set up Simonson?
I didn't.
Cheryl.
I see your hands.
Officially, she's furniture. She comes with the apartment. She belongs to the tenant.
How many times you been in trouble with the police, Cheryl?
Never.
Can't hear you.
Never.
Captain Hatcher. First, he wanted this case solved.
Simonson. What do you say?
It was an assassination.
Now, he just wants it closed.
Who bought you?
High and hot, and they want this case closed permanently. Their way. Now, you sign this.
You sign it!
Thorne refuses to close the Simonson case.
Just do what you have to do. Where did you go with Simonson?
He took me to church.
Church?
Bless me, Father, for I have sinned. It has been 6 months since my last confession.
Charlton Heston, Edward G. Robinson, Chuck Connors, Lee Taylor Young, Brock Peters, Paula Kelly, and Joseph Cotton fight for survival and try to solve the most bizarre riddle ever to face mankind. The search for the secret of Soylent Green. You will find out why Soylent Green means life. You will find out why Soylent Green means death.
We gotta stop him!
What is the secret of Soylent Green?
Please!
That's right. From 1973, the third and final installment of what I call the Charlton Heston sci-fi trilogy that started with Planet of the Apes and moved into The Omega Man. And yes, finally on Warner Brothers Blu-ray, because the world is a better place now, Soylent Green. Megan's going to be watching
well,
it very soon.
I'll never be able to see it without thinking of Phil Hartman
imitating
doing
Heston.
His imitation.
Yes, yes.
It's people.
Yeah, it's yeah. Deliciously ridiculous. And it's also, sad note, Edward G. Robinson's last film. This is what he ends his career with. Oh, yeah. So that is also a future What Is Kobe Watching segment.
That was the weirdest thing, I think. Well, now that wasn't the weirdest thing I've ever heard.
No, I think Tommy is the weirdest thing I've made you watch.
Yeah, maybe. That or Blue Velvet.
Yeah, see, you survived Blue Velvet, didn't you?
I survived, but I didn't like it.
Gosh, all right.
Are you still making people watch The Room?
Oh, are we ever?
Oh, you know what, Kobe? Why don't you hit the ID?
There are like two words that you don't say in front of Matt Sassy.
Why don't you?
One of them is the other is The Room.
Why don't you?
We're gonna hear this, from Tommy Wiseau right now.
I think so. Yeah.
I'm already regretting.
No, you're not.
Words, I can't get them. Back
no. Check this
mouth.
Out. Check this out.
Pay attention to me.
Hey everyone, this is Tommy Wiseau, and you're listening now. Film Sociology at the WF. Y.I. Indianapolis.
He's got to come to town. You guys got to help out.
Oh, man.
I found out.
I'll do what I can.
I know. He apparently at Bloomington, he got $2,500. Surely we can get some companies to ring up that
much. He should pay us $2,500.
Oh, no.
Isn't WFYI about to go into their fund drive?
We're gonna
have a special.
We're gonna
segment.
fork an extra $2,500 to get Tommy
special
Wiseau into town.
Segment.
We've got a room challenge this hour on film sociology.
See, we should tell our bosses that we're networking, we're brainstorming on
right.
the radio. It's not a show. It's thought process. So, but yes, Megan, thank you for bringing that up, because I know one of the ongoing things is me trying to get Lisa to watch this movie, especially with a group of WFYI employees.
I have plans. I'm sorry.
You always have plans.
I'm a busy girl.
My wife's not that busy, and I can't get her to watch the movie, and she lives with me. So. All right.
It's going to happen.
It will eventually
happen.
It'll be a lot of fun. All right, some other titles that came out on DVD and Blu-ray. On Blu-ray this week, because you might need this, All Dogs Go to Heaven. Remember that?
Classic.
Don Bluff with Burt Reynolds and Dom DeLuise and Charles Nelson Reilly and everybody else that was on Win, Lose, or Draw in the late 80s. Also out on Blu-ray, King of Kings, the 1961 biblical drama starring Jeffrey Hunter as Christ. Yes.
Wow.
Yeah. He had wavy hair back then. Also, I always remember it because also a Golden Turkey Award nominee for Worst Performance by an Actor Playing Jesus. Sadly, lost out to Ted Neely in Jesus Christ Superstar.
Hey.
What?
Really?
Yes, really.
Okay.
Also on Blu-ray, The Long Kiss Goodnight, the short collaboration between Gina Davis and director Rennie Harlan.
Boy,
look how that worked out for you. Because of Topsy Turvy coming out on DVD and Blu-ray, The Mikado is now out on Blu-ray, so you can get that. And apparently, because there's a fourth one coming, people have been asking for the Blu-ray releases of the first three Scream films. Let's move on. Also on Blu-ray.
Have people been asking? Or...
Okay, all right. Wes Craven's been asking. Fine. see, what else is out on Blu-ray that you have to have? Secret of Nim.
Oh,
if you're going to
sure.
have All Dogs Go to Heaven, you're going to have Secret of Nim. Thank you. Teen Wolf.
Oh, wow.
This
is taking me
on
back.
On Blu-ray, can you? Yes, which goes to show you, it's kind of like Journey having a box set. This is anything can get on Blu-ray. And The Ten Commandments is on Blu-ray if you want to see another film with Charlton Heston and Edward G. Robinson. Soylent Green is shorter. and also because I get my video list from the AV Club of the Onion, which is, of course, the number one news source for
film
sociology. Mm-hmm. It's the same organization that told us that Jennifer Garner is going to be playing Miss Marple really soon. Nobody asked for that. And anybody, in case anybody didn't hear that, this is Megan's eyes rolling. Big time. But according to Screen Media Productions, they're putting out a DVD called Zombie Women of Satan. I don't know why that's there. So, all right. We are moving on. Kobe, let's hit your theme music. You love this.
Where is it? Oh, here we are.
And now it's time for What is Kobe Watching?
What is Kobe watching?
Let's see where we leave off last week.
Well,
Out of Sight. You watched Out of Sight.
Loved Out of Sight.
Oh, yes. You were trying to get through the John Wayne movies.
Mm-hmm.
The Quiet Man and The Searchers.
Yep.
And as I've learned, making Kobe watch films from the 50s is the cinematic equivalent of eating your vegetables. You're having a hard time with it, aren't
you? Yeah, it's... The 70s were a different time.
Which bugs me to no end. That's his way of saying the movie's slow.
It is... But the
50s are worse.
The 50s are a way different time, and I tried to watch The Quiet Man last Friday night, and I got maybe about a half hour into it, and just
half hour into The Quiet Man. Look how much you miss some of the white hot chemistry between John Wayne and Maureen O'Hara, and one of the best fight scenes in cinema history, sir. Stay with it.
I'm going to have to muscle through that one.
You will have to muscle through that one. Like Ward Bond, you'll muscle through it.
Also, haven't got to...
The Searchers.
Well, The Searchers and Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf.
Ooh,
you are
so lucky to have that one to watch for the first time. It is one of the greatest. It really is.
Thank you, Megan.
It is.
Thank you. See?
That is like, I mean, yeah, that's one of my all-time
favorites. And have lots of bourbon while watching it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so we're gonna pile on, you know, because sometimes the Hollywood obits, you know, inspires me to add to what is Kobe watching, and well, like Elizabeth Taylor last week, that was the case, and it's gonna happen again. Farley Granger passed this past week at the age of 85, and is known for two things most notably: two films involving Alfred Hitchcock, Rope, he's one of the guys, and Strangers on a Train. Not Throw Mama from the Train, which is the homage, but yeah, he plays the man who runs into the wrong person at the wrong time, played by Robert Walker. And since you survived Hitchcock already once,
yeah,
the man
also again not by choice. What was the bet on that one? Oh, that was the fantasy football.
That was the fantasy football. Yeah. My fantasy football team beat your fantasy football team because we don't sound 16 enough. you had to watch Psycho, and guess what? You did okay, didn't you?
I did.
It didn't shake your mental core as we know it.
No.
See, so I think you're ready for more Hitchcock. Mm. So, I'm giving you more cinematic vegetables. You have. I'll tell you what. I will let you pick between Strangers on a Train or Rope. Your choice. That being said, if you get through those, I'll let you watch The Fighter.
The Fighter,
which came out last year. Two Academy Award winning performances, and Melissa Leo's F-bomb. Love that. And all barmaids should look like Amy Adams.
And you got a little Christian Bale.
A very skinny Christian Bale. Mm-hmm. Not as skinny as
The
Machinist.
Not as skinny as The Machinist. Not as skinny.
That's right.
What was the other film that Melissa Leo got nominated for?
Frozen River.
Yeah.
Frozen River. Excellent
that
film.
That was a good one.
Excellent film. So anyway, you're set.
Okay,
you got a lot of films
on your
palette. So, all right, we have just a scant couple of minutes. Lisa, what's going on with the Double I Double F? And congratulations with God of Love.
Oh, thank you. So God of Love won an Oscar for Best Short Film, and it also won our Best of the Fest, Best Short Film last summer.
Smart judges think alike.
Right. We scooped the Oscars. Gosh, what's going on with the festival? We're full on submissions mode. We're watching films and planning this year's events. It's July 14th to the 24th at the IMA, indiefilmfest.org. I think the biggest thing right now, we've got a couple events going on. On April 20th, we're doing a new roving cinema, which is our program where we take movies to the different venues. We are screening The Big Lebowski at High Life Lanes at Jillian's.
I'm bringing the 50-gallon pump drum of White Russians.
So, White Russian drink special, $5 all night. So,
gallon.
IndieFilmFest.org, check out that. And then, if you're familiar with the website Kickstarter.org, Kickstarter, it helps fund projects and programs, and it started with filmmakers, and now a lot of organizations are using it. And so one of the things we're encouraging the community to do is help us make the festival happen. So we've got a Kickstarter going right now that you can check out.
Very good.
So, yeah,
excellent.
Thanks.
Megan, what's going on with Civic?
Well, you know,
I'm sorry, booth talking
booth,
to Civic.
Well, you can still call it the Civic.
It's not a golf tournament, for crying out loud.
Not yet.
Oh.
But we are going to Carmel.
Jolene did correct me on the proper name last time.
Good for her.
Yeah. So all right. Anyway, what's going on with you guys?
Well, we are very busy wrapping up our final season at Marion University. And our next show that we're going to be opening is the musical comedy Murders of 1940. That's going to run through May.
Kobe, the 40s were a different time, too.
Really?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. And then we open our next season in September up at the Center for the Performing Arts. And if you haven't driven by the whole campus up there, it's really something. And the two theaters where we're going to be living are just, they're just going to be amazing. There's just nothing like them. So we'll be having actors and performances in a little different medium.
Very
than
good.
On this show. So.
What's the website?
CivicTheater.org. And there it's not go. Changing, even though we're moving.
Okay. All right. Well, Kobe, let's give him some words to live by.
Silent Breed is people!
Zardoz has spoken.
Ladies, thank you for coming in. I think you're going to have to come back in a few weeks after Megan watches The Wrestler.
No, I've got to see The Wrestler and then
and
we'll
Moon.
Talk. And Moon.
Okay, so yeah, let's have this quartet reunite in a few weeks.
Sounds
this is
good.
Fun. So thank you, ladies.
All right. Thank you.
On behalf of Kobe Slagle and the ladies, I'm Matthew Soucy. Go see a good movie. You deserve it. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD to the Point and WFYI.org. Go, Butler.
We go. Happy birthday, Dan!